remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. And you may immediately say to yourself, how shall I keep it holy? And you're here. So there it is. Full disclosure there. Full completement. Completion. You are here. You are keeping the Sabbath day, and you are keeping it holy. That is, you are sanctifying it. So be congratulated. Be encouraged. And be aware of the fact that this is the end of all of God's expectations for us, that we come each week to worship Him in this holy place. I understand, although I did not witness, that the president gave a 70-minute discourse this week. So that means to me that I should at least get 75% of that, right? I'm going to get to go 45 minutes. But it is worth noting that the second and the fourth commandments, both of which I have drawn in our series, is the longest of them all. And so we might rightly say that this should draw our attention more greatly than the others. Another reason why we should consider this intently today is because of the fact that it is the last of the first table of the law. That the tables, two of them, are not divided evenly, five and five, but instead the first four are our duty to God. And the last six detail our duty to our fellow men. And so we find ourselves then charged to keep the Sabbath day holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work. You or your son or your daughter, your manservant or your maidservant, or your cattle, or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. The first commandment establishes God's claim as the only God and protects all the law as the only law. It is His law, and all just law proceeds from it. The second commandment establishes the way in which we may know God and worship Him rightly. God is not a figment or an extension of our imaginations. That would be idolatry. But instead, if God is true, then He has the right, privilege, and we might say the duty to demand of us the way in which He is to be worshipped in holiness and truth. The third commandment, as we saw last week, and Father Heaton did so well to explain how it is that we are the bearers of the divine name, that we should not take God's name in vain. Yes, don't go around cussing, but it is much more than that. Jesus, when presented with His opponents, the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, as the gospel writers were quick to tell us, He, standing in the temple, and they asking Him tricky questions, and on this day it was, to whom should we pay taxes? To Caesar or not? And His response was, let me see a coin. Their response was to give Him a coin, and He asked them, whose image does it bear? They said, Caesar's. His response, give it back. Give it to them. Give them all of their filthy money. For giving to Caesar what is Caesar's, but then He adds, give to God's what is God, give to God what is God's. We so often plumb or reap from this saying that we should all be good taxpayers. I don't think that that was what Jesus' point was. Jesus' point was is that the greater claim is upon us who bear the image of God. Give to God what is God's. And so we see in the third commandment then that everything that is about us, being made in God's image and redeemed by Him and given our new identity in the waters of baptism, now we owe our image and everything that we own to God. So we find ourselves then in the fourth commandment, and the fourth commandment establishes the sacredness of time and God's order and rule over the world and our lives. It makes time sacred. We often, as C.S. Lewis says, like to think about our lives in terms of trying to squeeze out a little bit of good for God's sake so that we can get Him off our backs. We know that He has demands on us, and so we mind our language and we try to do some good in the world, hoping that by the end of the day, He will leave us alone so that we can have some spare extra time for ourselves to do with what we like. The sad problem with that, Lewis says, is that there is no time that God does not claim. In the fourth commandment, God lays claim to time, and the seventh day consecrates or makes holy all the rest of the week. And so God orders time in this fourth commandment as well. So the appeal then from the commandment is that we remember. This is an appeal to reason. It's not simply that we are to accept it because of God's dominant role, that He is God and we have to arbitrarily obey anything that He tells us to do. But instead, the commandment begins, remember. Remember all of the things that God has done for you. That He made the world in all of its goodness, its beauty, and its infinite variation and yet order. That God made a covenant with Adam, with Noah, with Moses, with Abraham, with Israel as they stood before Mount Zion. Remember that God has done all these things for you. Remember how God called Abraham out of all of the nations and promised him that He would love him and his children, and through him would bless all the nations of the world. Remember all the signs and wonders, the plagues of Egypt, the waters of the Red Sea that crushed the Israelites' enemies and set them free. Remember all of these great deeds that God has done for you. And now God asks you to give Him one day. An appeal to our reason. But also, there are two extra reasons given within the commandment itself. First, that there are 6 days to work and just one to rest. This is certainly acceptable. Only one day. And yet we, as human beings, dominated by our ambitions and passions, struggle to be able to give up that single one day. That there are 6 days to work. Notice that first. That in this fourth commandment, God establishes the goodness of work. That we should work. That sloth, laziness is not good. That 6 days, you should be busy. Don't get to the seventh day and say, "Oh my goodness, I put off all of this, and so I got to cram it in on God's day." God tells us working is a good thing. The object of that work, which is the provision for all of our necessities, is a good and joyful thing, but it is not the greatest of all things. The object of our labor is rest. And we, sadly, as a people, I think, have forgotten that. We have, as ambitious Americans, thought that labor is its own best reward. But that is not true. This commandment establishes that labor is itself a good, but rest is the object, not the work itself. Indeed, this deeper truth leads us to understand how it is that in the end, or the fulfillment of God's providential plan for the world that he has made, there will be eternal rest that awaits us. But also, this first reason that God gives 6 days to work and one to rest establishes order in the world that God has made. God could, by virtue of his being our creator, demanded to have all 7 days, that we all be about the business of worshiping and working on his behalf. But God instead gives all of those days to us except one. The Sabbath, you see, is a portion devoted to the Lord and establishes the principle of the tithe, even though it's not one-tenth, it's simply one-seventh. But nonetheless, God gives us all and asks only for a portion in return. And finally, 6 days to work and one to rest. Isn't it the case that our secular leaders find the power and authority to declare national holidays, days of rest, days of feasting and of celebration, whether it be for our nation's independence or we're coming up on Labor Day for the good of the laboring ones in our midst? Our secular leaders have power to declare days off, days of rest. God is greater than they are, so God is just in declaring that we must keep his holiday, holy day, for a holiday each day of the week. So this first reason, 6 days to work and one to rest. But the commandment gives us a second reason why we should take one day for a rest, and that is by example. God worked himself 6 days and rested on the seventh day. God himself did this, and so we must follow his example. God doesn't demand anything of us that he hasn't done for himself. God proves himself to be just and trustworthy and worthy of following his example. Note how it is that all justice and all example flows from God himself. This is how we understand what is true and what is just, because God has made it so himself. Where does justice come from? At the very outset of our lives, children at the youngest of ages are bright enough to say, "Hey, you didn't keep that rule that you just gave me." And the parent says, "Well, just do what I told you to do." But you see, inherently, natively, human beings have that logical objection, the tu quoque is what it's known as. "Hey, how about you also?" That's the objection. How about you also? And here we find that God has said, "Yes, me also. I have worked, and now I have rested." Because God is true and dependable, he is worthy of our worship. Because God is true and dependable, he is right to demand how we worship him by his own laws. Because God is true and dependable, he has set a seal upon our oaths and upon our lives. Because God is true and dependable, we must worship him one day out of seven, resting in the same way as he has rested. If only our own magistrates would do as much. If only our own magistrates in our own time and in our own land would take upon themselves the burden of their own law. That magistrates would take care not to kill or to commit adultery or not steal from their people or bear false witness against one another and their people or covet the things that their people had. This, you see, is the very source of justice. But of course, justice depends upon the magistrate submitting himself to the law of God standing above him. And so we find that God himself has demanded that we worship and rest on the seventh day, because he himself has rested the seventh day. So how shall we keep the Sabbath day holy? Holy. Is there something special about Sundays? I mean, if you were dropped into the middle of the Pacific on a deserted island, you lost track of time, you didn't have some things that like scratch little marks on the side of a coconut tree or gouge it into the side of a rock, and so you could keep up with what day it was, as if you had remembered after the trauma of being like dropped onto that island, that you actually could remember what day it was, would you be able to wake up one day and say, ah, evidently today is the Sabbath day? Probably not. There is nothing essentially different about this day as opposed to a Saturday or a Tuesday. I don't care what you say about Fridays, it's still just as the same as the next day. It's not any better than the rest of the days. But this day is holy because God has declared it to be so. In the same way that God declared the forbidden fruit to be forbidden, not because of the fact that Adam and Eve could empirically look at the fruit hanging from the tree and say, ah, I noticed that there are copious amounts of hydrochloric acid dripping from it, and that there are worms and nasty things crawling on it, evidencing it's being rotten, so I don't want to eat that thing. No, I imagine that the fruit on the tree was tempting, wasn't it? That's the point. It was tempting. But it was off limits because God said it was so. So in the same way, the Sabbath day is holy because God has declared our obedience upon it. And it is a question of our being willing to obey this law. Lord, have mercy upon us and incline our hearts to keep this law. And what is the law? Well, first, that we should rest. We should rest not only from our labor, but we should also rest from the cares of life from which we labor. And that may be more difficult than the labor itself. But we should, as best we can, put far from us the cares of this world. I would offer to you that you should not watch Fox News on Sunday. That the thing that winds you up and increases the care of this world, you should avoid on Sunday. And that goes for any of your favorite political websites as well. And I understand that the ladies receive their news from their Facebook feed, so Facebook is off as well. Not simply the labor, but it is the cares of this world for which we labor that we must put off. So it is not simply working, but it is also devoting ourselves to the care of body and soul which our loving Heavenly Father has asked us to commit to. He loves us more than we love ourselves. We would work ourselves into an early grave, or perhaps into an insane asylum, because we worry day by day. But the Jews had numerous Sabbaths. They had the Sabbath at the end of every week, so they had the Sabbath of days, but they also had the Sabbath of years, that every seventh year was supposed to be, and this is where we get the word, sabbatical. That every seventh year, the Jews were not to work at all. They were supposed to depend upon the largesse, the great benevolence of the God that had called them to provide for them the things that they needed. But it wasn't simply every seventh year, but the seventh seven was also marked by the Jubilee year. The 50th year was to be a year of complete and utter rest. In fact, it was so restful that all debts were forgiven. Can you imagine that? If there's one thing that makes you anxious, isn't it your mortgage? I know that there are some of you who are blessed to not have a mortgage right now, and God bless you. But the fact is that it is our debts thing that cause us sleepless nights, and on the Jubilee year, all debts were forgiven. and all hereditary lands were restored to their rightful owners. It was a reset of life, because God is in the business of resurrection. God is in the business of giving us life. It's so often the case that we imagine God as being the grumpy one who doesn't want us to have fun. But the fourth commandment shows us, no, it's we who are the ones that are working ourselves to oblivion. It is God who's saying, take a break. Take a break. I'm not the one that says that you have to work your fingers to the bone. Take a break. Father Heaton was gracious enough to do the Bible math for me in terms of, if you kept all of the Sabbaths and all of the feasts and all of the holy days, you get a day off about one in every 4 days. If you just distribute it across the year, about one in every 4 days, you get a break. I think that sounds pretty good. One in every 4 days, God asks his people to rest. Now, of course, the objection that is made to this is that, well, all the ceremonial law was fulfilled and ended in Jesus. Therefore, the Sabbath law is no longer obligatory for us. That was part of the ceremonial law. But of course, the apostles, good Jews all, kept the spirit of the law, but changed the day from Saturday to Sunday. Remember, the Jews had kept the seventh day, the seventh day. The Saturday was their holy day. But we see as early as the book of Acts that the apostles and their followers began to keep the first or eighth day of the week as holy. The Jews kept the seventh day holy because they looked back to the day God created the world. Christians celebrated the next day, the eighth day, looking to the moment that God had remade the world in the resurrection of his son Jesus and the promise of the new creation that awaits. The eighth day. Have you ever noticed how it is that the baptismal font is eight-sided? Many of the ancient churches were made, at least with one part of them, octagonal. The eighth day is the resurrection day. That is the Christian day in which we rest, in which we celebrate God's victory over death and the promise of new creation. And a bit of an application at that point as well, being that I had never seen as many Seventh-day Adventist billboards until I moved to Lynchburg. I had no idea that this was such a central location for the Seventh-day Adventists. They are a sect that proclaims that all of Christianity has made a grave mistake by changing days and seasons, and they quote from Daniel 7 as one of the signs of satanic influence in the people of God, that they change times and seasons and say, see there, all of Christianity except for Seventh-day Adventists have got it wrong. Sadly, I believe that they are wrong. That the Christian church, following the apostles' understanding that now all things have truly been made new, that our sacred day, the ordering of time, now God is working new life in the creation. And we celebrate it on Sunday, the first day of the week. So how to rest? Well, yes, rest. And that's it. You need to rest. If you need some explanation about how to rest, we may need an intervention in your household. You know how much I love Augustine. Augustine says that the commandments are more in need of hearing than they are in need of explaining, is what Augustine says. That people just need to listen to them. Yes, you have preachers to explain them to you, but you just need to hear them. Rest. Don't work. Well, which work? Okay, fine. What you normally do. When you say, I'm going to work today, what is that? Fill in the blank. Don't do that on Sunday. Now, fair enough, there is work that is allowed on Sunday. Divine work. I open it with my heart. You are keeping the Sabbath day. Congratulations. If you had a question, how? Zip. Okay? This is one thing, one work that is expected that you come to worship on Sunday morning. Necessary medical work. I know I have a parish full of doctors, and I'm so glad for you, and I pray for you every week. The fact is that I think that a cold could wait until tomorrow. And Dr. Bob, I know that being allergic to things can be life-threatening, but I think that most of it could wait until tomorrow. But it's possible that you could be called in on emergency. Heart attacks. Definitely want to have somebody be there for me on Sunday. Definitely want that. But I think it's fair to say that most doctors work themselves into an early grave. I'm sad to say that last time I looked, doctors lead a list of the highest incident of alcoholism, followed closely by ministers. Rest on the Sabbath day. Necessary medical work, yes. Caring for other living beings. I know we've got some husbandmen and women out there with cows and sheep and horses and chickens and all other kinds of things. Don't look at them through their cages and stalls and say, Sabbath, I can't help you. Just not going to have to hold it. No, you have to take care of them as well. Recreation. You are allowed to recreate. I want you to enjoy the Sabbath day. Sabbath day is not to be drudgery. Sabbath day is to be your favorite day of the week. Recreation. King James, the royal, beginning of the 1600s, even published a book entitled The Book of Sports. The Book of Sports, in which he made a royal proclamation of all of the games that he wanted his people to play on the Sabbath day, including bowling, the outdoor, I don't know if you can imagine an indoor bowling lane, but bowling and archery, because archery is manly, and it increased the virtue of his standing army, of course, because they were all able archers, because they were practicing each Sabbath day in the commons. To recreate, to get out and enjoy life, because as a matter of fact, this is the purpose or goal of labor. Working is not its own object. You work so that you can enjoy and rest. Who is supposed to keep the Sabbath day? You are, so says the commandment. And that includes husbands and wives. So husbands don't say, well, it says I'm supposed to, but I wish that you would go make me Sunday dinner. Wife. The wife is supposed to enjoy her Sabbath day as well. Children, it says, are supposed to keep the Sabbath day holy. That is, going to church isn't an option. I would say that going to the nursery isn't an option, but I know that there are some of you who groan at the thought of having little children screaming, crying, and crawling underneath your feet as you try to pay attention to the service. But no, they are supposed to learn their religion like the rest of you and me as well. As Father Heaton reminded us last week, we don't choose our religion. That religion is chosen for us. We don't choose our nationality. We don't choose our religion. And our children need to be here with you as well. And finally, your servants. Your servants are supposed to get a day off as well. And you all say, I don't have any of those. Not true. Not true. Chick-fil-A has it right. They close on Sunday. I wish that every business would close on Sunday so that you would not be tempted to go have Sunday dinner at your favorite restaurant. Now I know that this is sounding really crotchety at this point. Isn't it funny how it is that we have 10 commandments that all of us say, oh yes, that's God's word, never kill, never steal. But we say, but do you know that Sunday thing? I would really like to break that every chance I got. right? Why is he being such a stickler on Sunday?
Well, it's in there. It's in there.
And you do have servants. There are people that work for you on Sunday. They work in restaurants. They work at Walmart. They work in your favorite boutique where you want to maybe go look and see what the new spring and fall fashions are. I don't know. Father Heaton wants to take a run down to Buck and Bass or whatever it is that we've got around the corner. We don't have Buck and Bass. But anyway, great outdoor shop there where he can look at his next shop window. There are all kinds of things that we would like to go do on Sundays that involve other people working for us. Give them a break. Let them have a rest too. Because God loves us and wants us to rest from our labors. Amen.